Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have the privilege to have a returning guest, Bill Federer, who's a best-selling author and speaker, and we're going to talk about Christmas traditions and how some of the things that may almost seem like they're secular trappings of the Christmas season actually point back to Jesus Christ, which is what Christmas is all about. Bill, welcome to the program, and Merry Christmas to you.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Okay, so let's begin by mentioning you wrote a book related to Christmas, and Prager, as in Dennis Prager, PragerU, actually featured you talking about this. Tell us about the book and tell us about the PragerU video.
Right, so the book is There Really is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. And PragerU did a video. They whittled it all down to 5 minutes. It's amazing how they do that. I give the story of St. Nicholas, right, the third century Greek bishop. St. Nicholas is to Greek Orthodox what St. Peter is to Roman Catholics, which St. Patrick is to the Irish. He's like the founding father of the Greek Orthodox Church. A movement swept through Christianity in the third century called Pietism or Monasticism, where it was, if you really are a Christian, you should give away all your money and live in a cave like a hermit, or separate from the world and live in a monastery. And so anyway, Nicholas becomes a Christian, and he wants to give away all his money anonymously because he wants the credit to go to God, not to him. So he sneaks into town at nighttime and throws money in the window of poor people. And the one story that was popular was a merchant in the town of Patara, Asia Minor, which is right around where the seven churches that were mentioned in the book of Revelation were there. The merchant had gone bankrupt. Creditors back then would not only take your house and lands, they would take your children. And it'd be an unfortunate, terrible life of sex trafficking. And this merchant had three beautiful daughters. He knew if they were taken, it'd be bad. So he thought if he could hurry up and marry the daughters off, they wouldn't be taken by the creditors. But he didn't have money for a dowry, which was needed for a legally recognized wedding. The story is Nicholas throws some money in the window, maybe lands in a shoe or a stocking that's drying by the fireplace, provides the dowry. The oldest daughter gets married, does it for the second daughter. And when he's doing it for the third daughter, the dad's waiting up, runs outside and catches him. Nicholas makes a promise not to tell. It's just a Greek thing until 7 centuries later, the Muslims invade and they destroy Christian graves, and they don't want Nicholas's grave, so they move to be destroyed. So they move to Italy in the year 1087. The Pope Urban II builds a cathedral, and they're still there, his remains. And that's the same Pope Urban II that calls for the first crusade. Right. I mean, here they're moving the most popular Greek saint over. Greeks are fleeing the Muslim invasion. He calls for the first crusade. But his the gift-giving tradition spread across Europe so much so that it sort of in protest, Francis of Assisi comes up with a creche scene, the nativity scene, saying we need to focus back on the birth of Jesus. Martin Luther, 1517, starts the Reformation. By this time, There's saints' days for every day of the year, and churches are filled full of relics and saints, and so, and he considered it a distraction. So he ends the saints' days, and the popular gift-giving, he moves to December 25th and says all gifts come from the Christ child. And the German pronunciation of Christ child is Christkindl, like kindergarten, kindercare. Kind means child, Christ means Christ. And over the years, Christkindl got pronounced Chris Kringle. So Chris Kringle is really Christkindl, which means Christ child. I go through the history. One important part is the book of Revelation says that Jesus will return at the end of the world to judge the living and the dead, riding a white horse. Saints will come back with him, riding white horses. St. Nicholas is one of the saints, so he will be one of those riding a white horse. But since he's so special to the Greeks, they have him coming back once a year for a little mini judgment, a little checkup on the kids, make sure they're on the right track, see who's naughty, see who's nice. Saints come from where? Heaven, the celestial city, New Jerusalem, that turns into the North Pole. And the angels turn into the elves, the Lamb's Book of Life and Book of Works turns into the Book of the Naughty and the Nice. And in Norway, they didn't have horses to ride on, so he's on a reindeer. So you can see that the traditions get a little bit off. But in Holland, he still comes once a year riding a white horse dressed as a bishop to check up on the kids.
Oh, wow.
And they add a little scary part to it. He has a helper named Zwarte Piet, who is a Muslim. And they tell the little kids, if you're good, you'll get a present. If you're naughty, Svarte Pete will put you in a gunny sack, take you back to Spain, and sell you into Muslim slavery. People forget the Muslims had controlled Spain for 700 years, and they sold over 1 million Europeans into slavery. There were whole Catholic orders called the Trinitarians who would collect alms and donations at church services and go to North Africa to ransom your friend back. So it was a legitimate threat. I was doing an interview and radio, and somebody called in and said, yeah, I grew up in Holland, and all the little boys in our neighborhood would go to sleep with pocket knives in their pockets the night before St. Nicholas visited. I said, why is that? He goes, that's to cut ourselves out of the gunny sack in case Svarte Pete took us.
Wow. Wow, that's a fascinating.
Anyway,
yeah, so all of these things get back to Jesus. But now let me ask you this. You summarized all this in, like 4.5 minutes or so for PragerU. How did that work? Who wrote the script? You, I assume?
Yeah, I wrote like 10 pages of script, and we kept going back and forth and back and forth, whittled it down to one page. I went up to New York to their suit studio, and
you had to whittle down 10 pages of content down to one page.
Oh yeah,
And then they brought you to New York City where there was a studio or something.
Yeah, it's just in one of those buildings. I mean, it's nothing fancy, and they had me in front of a green screen and read the script like 20 times, and they filmed it, and they just took the best clips they liked, and then they spent 6 months doing all the little graphics.
Wow, it took them 6 months to do that. And that was all done, I assume, in California or whatever.
I don't know, but they do a great job with those little graphics.
Absolutely, they do. And in fact, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put a link to your PragerU video, and it's already had more than 2 million views, which is huge. 2 million views of anything is big, and so I think that's exciting. Okay, so let's go back to the Christmas traditions. So even the reindeer, in effect, that's a Norwegian adaptation or whatever, but of Jesus on the white horse from Revelation, essentially.
Right, right. And so we don't view Santa Claus as a Christian figure, but Muslims do. That's why they outlaw Christian Santa Claus. So in countries where Muslim immigrants come in, guess what? Santa Claus gets kicked out because they view him as a Christian person. The change of his dress happened in New York. So the Dutch, and I already told you the Dutch tradition of St. Nicholas, visiting once a year. But in Holland, New Amsterdam, it was founded by Dutch. The first Dutch Reformed Church was the St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church.
You're talking about in New York City?
In New York City.
Yeah.
And
New York City, in some ways the cultural capital of the U.S., the first church there was named in honor of St. Nicholas. Is that right? Ever?
Right, right.
Cool.
Yes. It was a St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church. There's a big St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church in Belgium.
Wasn't John Jay of the Dutch Reformed tradition, and maybe even Alexander Hamilton?
Possibly. I do know that the Roosevelts, Teddy Roosevelt, was a Dutch Reformed. But the story that Washington Irving, he's the guy that gave us Rip Van Winkle, Legend of Sleepy Hollow. He writes Dietrich Knickerbocker's History in New York, and he says, now St. Nicholas visits us once a year, riding in his wagon over the treetop, throwing out presents to his favorites. But he describes him not as a bishop, but dressed in a typical Dutch outfit of long trunk hose, leather belt, boots, and a stocking hat. And then we have Clement Moore. He's the Hebrew professor, and his family donates land for a seminary in New York. If you go to downtown Manhattan, there is the Clement Moore Park where he lived. He writes the famous poem around 1823, A Visit from St. Nicholas. It was the night before Christmas, all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. So he's still St. Nicholas. He just shrunk, a jolly plump elf. Laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. And so now that he's small in size. But then we have another installation with the Civil War. Thomas Nast, Harper's Weekly magazine. He's the one that gave us the Democrat mule and the Republican elephant in his political cartoons. He does a cover of St. Nicholas talking to the Union troops with a North Pole sign in the background. That's really the first visual appearance of the North Pole sign, and it was a political jab at the South during the Civil War.
Oh, North Pole. I see. I never realized that. Right. All right, go on.
And then you have Haddon Sundblom, an artist that gave us the Quaker Oats Man and Aunt Jemima syrup, right? He was hired by Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola invented mass marketing. It's the best trademark name in the world. And for 30 years, Haddon Sundblom did a full-grown image of Santa Claus. By the way, Santa Claus is the Dutch pronunciation of Sant Nicholas. Saint Nicholas. So
right.
we're using the Dutch pronunciation. When we say Santa Claus, it's the Dutch pronunciation of Saint Nicholas. And so so the Coca-Cola version, he's full grown, he's a nice huggable grandfather, and with their mass marketing, it's now all around the world. But there really was a bishop, a Christian man who lived in Asia Minor, and the Greeks have lots of stories about Saint Nicholas, that he was there at the Council of Nicaea and slapped Arius for starting the Arian heresy.
Huh.
Another story, there was a corrupt politician, and he the politician was going to execute some soldiers to cover up his corruption. And Nicholas goes down there and breaks through the crowd, grabs the sword out of the executioner's hand, throws it down, and then in front of everybody tells the stuff that the governor was doing in secret. And the governor knows, nobody knows these details other than God, and so he begs Nicholas to pray for him. So he would have confronted corrupt politicians. And then he was imprisoned under Emperor Diocletian, but he's let out by Constantine. And now that it's legal to be a Christian, he preaches against pagan worship. And so nearby was the temple to Diana, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, 127 huge pillars and temple prostitutes. And so he preaches against it, and they tear it down. And so he would have been preaching against sexual immorality today. Wow. if he were alive. And but the book has all kinds of – so it's Christmas Day – a little trivia, you know, the gospel says that John the Baptist's dad was in the temple, and the angel appeared to him and said he's going to have the son named John, and he didn't believe it, and he's struck dumb. Remember that? If you read it close, it says that John the Baptist's dad's name is Zechariah, and he is of the order of Abijah. And you think, what's that mean? David, King David, divided the Levites into 24 groups, and they each took two times a year to service the temple. And nobody really knew this sacerdotal system calendar until the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. And also Josephus mentions in passing that one of the tribes, one of the priestly families, was on duty when the temple was destroyed in Jerusalem. So we know when the temple was destroyed, and we know the family that was there. And then once we have the Dead Sea Scrolls, we know the order, and Abijah was the eighth one. And so his term in the temple would probably be end of September, which was the Day of Atonement. And so if John was conceived by Elizabeth around the end of September, then the end of March is 6 months later, Elizabeth is 6 months pregnant with John. And that's when Mary is visited by the Holy Spirit, conceives Jesus, and Mary goes and visits Elizabeth. And so that's why the feast of the conception of Jesus is on March 25th. And then 9 months after March 25th is December 25th.
So there's a credible case that was the original. So there's a credible case that December 25 really was the birthday of Jesus. We have half a minute left. Anything else you want to say, Bill? AmericanMinute.com.
Right. And so the title of the book is There Really Is a Santa Claus, the History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. A lot of fun stuff. And that Christmas was the most, a lot of kings got crowned on Christmas Day, and a lot of neat trivia.
Charlemagne. Yeah, excellent. Okay, Bill, thank you so much. God bless you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Okay, thank you now. Bye-bye.